Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the UFO Files, another one of the Phoenix Light specials. And we have William Warwick on the phone from Virginia. But we're dealing with Phoenix. And, William, you might explain that to everybody, exactly what is happening. You're promoting a Phoenix Lights conference, and it'll be on March 31st and April 1st there in Glendale, Arizona. And we can talk about that in great detail in a moment. But tell me how you got involved with the Phoenix Lights. And welcome to the show.
Well, thanks a lot, Jerry. I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me about this. Actually, I got involved with this because I was a witness to a boomerang on March 12, 1997 in Norfolk, Virginia. And for 6 months after that, well, maybe not quite that long, for a number of months after that, there were no other sightings that I was aware of in Virginia. And quite frankly, it really just upset me. And when I found out about the boomerang sightings in Phoenix, I really began my investigation in earnest, figuring that there was enough material out in Phoenix that I might be able to figure out what was really going on and maybe perhaps what had happened to me the previous night on March 12th.
Now, the reason, and we'll get into more about that, than what you saw in Norfolk and what happened there, but the breaking news, I guess, this week would have to be the fact that former Arizona Republican Governor Fife Symington III is recanted what he did originally. You remember it originally at a press conference, he had somebody come out in a costume and made fun of it all, but he suddenly has changed his mind. He's come forward and said, "Hey, I believe it. I saw it." Isn't that right?
Well, he's actually, you know, gone on record now. Well, actually, the real story is that he went on record back in 1997. The documentary producer of Out of the Blue, James Fox, kind of got a quick interview with him before he was going to trial. If you recall, he was on trial for various alleged charges. And James Fox was able to get a quick interview with him, I believe, on the courthouse steps right before he went in. And a concerned citizen from Phoenix had recorded a tape recording of some questions that she would have liked to have had asked of Governor Symington. And it's my understanding that James presented that tape recording to Governor Symington, and he responded to the questions on video. And basically said that, you know, he was going to, I believe, get the Arizona Safety Police or Organization or whatever, whoever's in charge of that particular thing for your state to investigate it. And then promptly, you know, entered the courtroom. And then, of course, I believe it was the next day, after a 6.5-hour judge's chamber conference inside the courtroom, after that interview, came up the next day and held a press conference that we're also familiar with the guy dressed up in an alien costume.
Now, the trial, we don't want to confuse our audience. The trial had nothing to do with UFOs.
No, completely separate subject, which he was later, I believe, the charges were dismissed by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals.
So, but this was just an opportunity for James, who produces this movie, this DVD, to catch him.
Yeah, he was actually, you know, as part of other UFO cases that he was investigating, he wanted to, of course, investigate the Phoenix Lights. And so he had this videotape testimony, but, of course, after Fife Symington came out, you know, the next day with that, the whole alien costume debacle, you know, he wasn't going to print it, you know, just make him look stupid. Of course, Governor Symington would have denied it. So he's had this tape, this video, this evidence that Symington has had this experience, but he's been sitting on it, you know, for the reasons just given. And so now that Symington, you know, Governor Symington, for whatever reason, has come forward, and I truly believe to set the record straight. I've talked to Francis Barward at length about this issue, and the impression that I get, I'm not from Arizona, I don't know the man personally. All I know is what I've read and the people that I've talked to that were friends with him at one time before all of these things went down. And I think he's a straight shooter, and I think the government coerced him and a lot of other people that, like, for instance, Mike Fortson, who was at the trial, said that, you know, when he went into that judge's chamber for 6.5 hours and came out, he was white as a ghost, you know? And then, of course, the next day he announces this whole thing and does a 180, a complete 180, on the whole issue of the UFO subject. And, of course, now we can maybe understand why. Even if Governor Simon to this day will not come out and say anything about that, I think that there's enough evidence to show that something happened to make him do that, to change his mind.
Well, I mean, you mentioned Frances Barwood, and she's a city council member at that time, and she faced a lot of flack for asking innocent questions, if I remember correctly.
She just said in a council chamber, you know, can we look into this? That was it. You know, no conspiratorial talk, nothing crazy. It was just a very simple question by a duly elected, duly authorized, representative of the Phoenix government. And she was ignored, completely ignored. You know, if she had said, I want to find out about the murder case of, John Bonet on whatever day, you know, there would have been an answer to it. She could have asked any question she wanted to ask a question about, and she would have gotten a response on it, but she was completely ignored. And if you don't know Frances Barwood, you know, she's just one of those people that you just don't do that to, you know? And she did not take that answer at face value, and she said, you know, she looked into it. The only elected official, other than maybe Jimmy Carter, and possibly President Clinton, who actively tried to, you know, find out what was going on in a public manner.
Now, Frances Barwood's going to be at your conference.
Yes, she is. She certainly is, and she will be available, for questions from any other witnesses. Again, the conference is for the witnesses. It's called Witness 2007, and if you're a witness to the Phoenix Lights, the events that happened in Phoenix before, during, or after March 13th. We'd love to hear from you. You know, we're going to have a professional videographers on staff that will be able to videotape your testimony and set the record straight. You know, your governor, your former governor, is going on the record now to come out and support you, and I guarantee you that there will be many other people who will come forward to tell their stories as well.
Now let's tell everyone where this conference is, so people who are listening who have had the experience. I mean, this thing was huge. A lot of people have seen it.
Frances Barwood said that she personally spoke to over 700 people who witnessed these events. And she got a little over, I believe, 1,200 phone calls. She was only able to return about 700 of those to speak to those people in depth. So, 700 people did not see flares. 700 people did not see just lights in the sky. A very good portion of those, almost by my account, two-thirds of those sightings, occurred at beginning as early as 6:55 a.m., according to Peter Davenport of Newfork.
Now you're talking about 6:55 a.m. on the 13th.
6:55 p.m.
Okay. I want to make sure. And I guess it came down from northern Arizona across the state?
That's correct. Earliest reports were from right around the southeast corner of Nevada, northwest corner of Arizona. And the reports, you can literally go to the National UFO Reporting Center website and correlate the times and the dates and the descriptions and follow this object. You know what I mean by
that? Yeah, one of our staff did that, and it looks like it comes right out of from somewhere around Area 51, straight on down.
That's correct. And in fact, the day before on March 12th, which kind of sort of ties into the sighting that I had of a boomerang in Norfolk, Virginia. There were a number of sightings that described, lights that may or may not have been connected to a larger object, which was cruising towards Area 51.
Yeah, and we're going to get into your story about the Norfolk sighting and what happened there a little later in the program, but we're talking about the conference right now, and I want to get back to Symington, too, here, but the conference is where?
It's going to be in Glendale, Arizona, at the AT&T Auditorium, which is adjacent to the Thunderbird Executive Inn and Conference Center. All of our information, directions, how to buy tickets, hotel reservations at the Thunderbird can all be obtained at www.thenorfolk.com. NorfolkIncident.com, and Norfolk is spelled N-O-R-F-O-L-K, as in Norfolk, Virginia. And all the information that your listeners, if they're interested in coming and giving their testimony, is on that website. They can check it out.
And on this page where this program can be heard at any time, that we have a link to your website. You would advise people to contact you ahead of time, if possible. Yeah. I'm talking about people who have a sighting. Obviously, the people coming to the conference probably would want to make a reservation.
Yes, they can call the again, all the information is on the website. There's a number that you can call for the Thunderbird Executive, and if you mention Eyewitness 2007, they will give you a discount in case you want to stay for both days. The content of both days is going to be split up so that if you do come, if you can only come for one day, you're still going to get a good chunk of information, as well as a really good presentation of the information that's in my book and that we'll probably touch on tonight. Although I have over 800 pages of information, which have to be culled down to, you know, who knows, a 300 or 400 page book, but about half of it is on my website, and we could spend 4 or 5 hours talking about that tonight. I don't think we can get through it all.
Yeah, I understand that, but you're urging really anyone that maybe even be a little reluctant to think about it. And if they're a witness, they can show up there and probably be heard.
You know, for 10 years, the skeptics have had their day, and they've been, you know, telling everyone that, you know, this is just flare drops, and the government has dropped these most recent flare drops in Phoenix trying to confuse people. You know, the government doesn't want the public to know any more than they do. And they will and have done anything as you know, that the governor of Arizona hopefully someday may be able to attest to,
it'd be interesting to find out why he changed his attitude like that.
You know, Jerry, that's the story here. That's the story. The story, for me, is not that that he's coming forward and saying that he saw a solid object, boomerang, or triangle-shaped object in Phoenix at 8:30 p.m. For me, the story is, why did he deny it, and why did he do the 180-degree turn? That's the story. And, you know, I don't know if he will be able to tell that story. And so the reason why I'm coming out and saying this now, you know, maybe publicly for the first time, is because I've talked to a lot of people that know him and felt betrayed when this happened and couldn't really quite understand why he would have done something like this. And, you know, perhaps it's better left for people other than Mr. Symington to postulate as to what might have been the reason for his action.
Well, he's a good friend with McCain, Senator McCain. McCain still hasn't come around. I mean, as far as saying he's seen anything.
Well, the whole UFO subject for 60 years has been the political equivalent of the touch of death. You know, I can't think of any politician of any stature at a national or local national level or federal level that has ever taken a stance on this, with the exception of Jimmy Carter, who, as my understanding, went to good old George Bush back when he was DCI, Director of Central Intelligence, and asked about the UFOs, and if it's my understanding, Mr. Bush's reply was, you don't have the clearance for that.
Yeah, and of course, people probably don't understand how Bush could get away with saying that to the president, but the point was, it was on his last day in office. And so, as the new, I believe it's Stansfield Turner, came in.
Correct. Who must have died mysteriously in a canoeing accident. Isn't that true, or am I confusing that with one of the other DCIs?
Let's talk a little bit about this Phoenix lighting, a whole effect. We're really not talking about all of the lights at 10 o'clock. We're talking about something huge at around 8:30, right?
Yes, correct. Absolutely correct. I believe the disinformation that has gone on, or let's say misinformation, and give the government a little bit of a break, is that, you know, it's called the Phoenix lights. You know, all of the attention has really been focused on events that happened around 10 p.m. in Phoenix. The vast majority of the sightings that I've seen, that I've investigated, and the witnesses that I've talked to, occurred, you know, around sometime between 8 and 9:30 p.m. And these are solid objects, boomerang-shaped objects, absolutely immense, mile-wide proportions. And those, all of those witnesses, Mike Fortson, Captain Trake Johnson, who's a former Northwest Airlines, retired Airlines captain, who's certainly qualified enough to know what a...
You named a couple of interesting names there, and we're going to take a break, and let's come back and talk about those two. And they're both going to be at the conference, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I have the full support of Mike Fortson, former Councilwoman Frances Bowers, Captain Trake Johnson. This is a conference of the witnesses, by the witnesses, and for the witnesses.
We'll be right back. Don't go away. I'm Jerry Pippin. We're doing the Phoenix Lights on the UFO Files.
Major sighting here.
On the 13th of March, weird happenings in the skies over Phoenix recently, and no one seems to be able to explain what it was.
And now, suddenly, six amber orbs in a row, totally equidistant from each other, massive span across, pop up.
People say they saw strange lights.
There is a strange bright light seen over the skies of Arizona. I guess a lot of people wondering.
There are another 10,000 Arizonans who saw the same thing.
Eyewitnesses who saw it say it's like nothing they've ever seen before.
Last night, shortly after 8 p.m., hundreds, maybe thousands of Arizonans reported seeing a triangular-shaped object with three to
thousands of people saw more than stars in the night sky.
The mystery remains unsolved and controversial.
There was nothing new.
The award-winning documentary by Dr. Lynn Kutar, The Phoenix Lights, is now available from shockjerrypippin.com. Order now. Supplies limited. Dealing with the Phoenix Lights, the Phoenix Lights Conference, of course, in Glendale, Arizona, on March 31st and April 1st, and we'll give you more details about that. This is a conference, of course, for people who are the witnesses, which is interesting. Welcome back to the show, William Warwick, who is promoting the conference and has quite a history in UFOs. And we'll get into some of that in a minute, but at the break, Bill, it's okay if I call you Bill.
Absolutely.
You mentioned some interesting people here that are going to be there. Mike Fortson, who has been on a mission, really. He's been looking for 10 years for photographs of this giant boomerang. Mike is from the same place where Symington lives.
He's a former Phoenix resident.
Yeah, I was just wondering if there was any connection there. That you could say?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Mike might correct me on that, but Mike followed political stuff for a long time. I believe I don't know if he was a political affairs officer or what in the Navy, but I could be wrong about that. But let's just say he followed a lot of political maneuverings. Okay. So when this whole thing broke, and he was a witness to the 8:30-ish boomerangs. That were also reported by Captain Trey Johnson later on at 10:22 p.m. Just like me, it's what Peter Jennings said, seeing is believing. And it's so true because, you can tell people till you're blue in the face. I saw, a 600-foot wide boomerang photo over my head, blah, 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 blah. But until you see it, it's hard to believe. And that's the thing that really, if you talk to the witnesses, okay, any of the real witnesses of the boomerang, not the lights, because the lights could be anything. To be honest with you, and no offense to any of the people that saw the lights, because I personally have seen glowing objects that are round and that are that sort of amber color. I've seen them down here in Norfolk. We've had other sightings of other people that have seen these things going back 50 years in Norfolk over the same area that I saw the boomerang. So I don't mean to put those witnesses off, but yes, Mike went on a mission to find other witnesses of the boomerang that were solid objects. And try to correlate and corroborate, sightings and stories.
Captain Trigg Johnson, you mentioned him. He's a pilot, a commercial airline pilot.
Retired, yes, correct. Northwest.
And why is he important to the story?
Because there are a couple of reports from military or professional, what I would call professional observers. What I mean by that is, and no offense to any old ladies that are out there, but the difference between, an 80-year-old woman who, sees something in the sky and a professional retired Northwest Airlines captain with, 10,500 flight hours and multi-engine aircraft, is like, you know, night and day. Now, it doesn't mean that the old lady can't see the same thing as professional airlines pilot, but certainly...
What you're saying, Bill, is what they use in the justice area in court. Witnesses have certain weight, and professional observers like pilots, police officers, military people carry a little more weight.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, it's just like in my particular case, I was a former, I was a senior member of the Civil Air Patrol, and we did search and rescue missions at Taunton Airport under the command of Anita Raymond. And, you know, I was the spotter. I had what was called Eagle Eyes, 2010 vision, and I sat in the back of the plane, and it was my job to be able to see things from far away, parts of aircraft, identify the parts, and help to guide the pilot and the co-pilot, you know, to a downed aircraft. And so, you know, people who are around aircraft a lot, they know what the flight characteristics are, they know what the flight envelopes are, they know, you know, what collision lights are, and ELTs, and EPIRBs, and all that stuff. And so they're familiar with all of the flight characteristics of normal aircraft, and you know, I would say some abnormal aircraft. And certainly Trey Johnson can testify to that. This was nothing like anything ever seen or anyone on this planet has ever seen.
We will get to your experience in Norfolk here in just a second, but there's a guy on your list here looking at your PR information I don't know. Tim Lay.
Tim Lay and his whole family.
Is that how do you pronounce his name?
I believe so.
L-E-Y?
I believe so, yep. Tim Lay and his whole family, his wife and his, I believe, his, I think it was his grandson at the time. Could be wrong about that. I haven't talked to Tim in a couple of, about a month and a half. But they witnessed, and as well as other people in his neighborhood, this huge boomerang-shaped UFO float over their head. They were just completely out of loss. And he's even gone on record, and I have the videotape testimony, not the videotape, but the audio interviews that he gave, you know, from 10 years ago, where, you know, even he will say that, you know, at first, you know, it's unbelievable, and he would never have said to someone who came up to him and said, you know, I saw a UFO, he wouldn't dismiss him out of hand, but until you see it, you just really can't appreciate the magnitude of it. It changes your life forever because you suddenly realize that everything that everyone has told you is impossible is not only possible, it's real.
Let's talk about your sighting the night before, I take it.
Yeah, March 12, 1997, that's correct, at 9:08 Eastern Standard Time in Norfolk, Virginia.
What happened there, there was an involve of a crash of a troubleshooter...
Troubleshooter 615.
Yeah, now, is that a helicopter?
Yes, that's Special Operations Flight Troubleshooter 615. Went down on March 13, 1997 at 11:19 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 80 miles off the coast of Norfolk. If you correlate 11:19 p.m. to Arizona time, basically what it means is that Special Operations helicopter flight crashed into the Atlantic Ocean at around exactly the same time as the height of the Phoenix Light at 9:30-ish Arizona time on March 13th.
Now, this troubleshooter 615 helicopter, when it crashed, there were some fatalities.
Yes, four very experienced airmen and pilot, co-pilot, and the two guys in the back died in that crash. Yes, there were fatalities involved with this. And the story, you know, the interesting thing about, there's a lot of interesting things about this story, but we can get into if you want, but this story was quashed. There was no media about this crash for 6 months until it was published in December of 1997 on the front page of the Virginia Pilot, and then we never heard another peep about it again. It almost is reminiscent of some of the stories that took months and months to come out involving the Phoenix Lights. And one has to wonder if there was a direct...
a correlation or whatever, but there were no deaths in Arizona, were there?
If you include the A-10 pilot that just decided to...
Now, we're talking about Craig Button.
Talking about Craig Button, that's correct, who decided on April 2nd, 1997, Craig Button was about to go on his first live bomb test, live bombing range. He activated, we would assume, his ground radar, and no one ever saw him alive again. Disappeared. It took 20 days for the government to find him. And allegedly, he crashed his plane into Craig's Peak over New York Mountain, about 800 miles from Davis Monthan Base. Now, the thing that's really, you know, again, bizarre about this whole case is that the government's explanation for the flare, as opposed to the Phoenix Lights now, okay, is that the visiting Air National Guard, 810 Squadron, from Maryland, dropped the flares, you know, various reports say 8 o'clock, some of them say 10 o'clock. Apparently the government doesn't really know. You know, you have to wonder, did Craig Button know something that he shouldn't have known?
Now, was Button from that Maryland National Guard?
No, he was from Davis-Monthan.
Okay.
He was from Davis-Monthan, which is of course, in Phoenix, you know, very near Phoenix. But he, you know, you got to understand this, he took off, he broke formation 2 weeks after the Phoenix.
There's some things about this thing... That trouble you, and I think we need to flush it out a little bit more. Tell people he crashed into ultimately a mountainside.
That's correct.
And I think they ruled it was suicide.
That's you know, whatever. Do you recall the Iowa incident where they said that sailor was gay and they were having a gay love affair and this, that, and the other thing, and then years later they found out it was total bull? Do you remember that, where the turret blew up on USS Iowa?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they did the same thing to Craig Button. The story came out the same way. First it was suicide, and then he was, you know, repressed homosexual, and then it was because his parents were Jehovah's Witnesses. It's total bull. His sister got on, I've never met her sister. I hope to God that she contacts me and she hears about this to set the record straight about her brother. I think her brother was a hero. I think he was, I'm going to go on the line here, I think he was killed. Okay, I think he was murdered. And there are a lot of things about this flight that make absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Tell me a couple of them.
Well, first of all, the bomb, he had four MK2 500 dumb bombs. The dumb bomb is just what it sounds like. There's no kind of guidance system on it. They were never found. The wreckage that was found, they never found the bombs. Okay.
Yeah, I remember they kept saying, well, it's down there in the snow someplace.
Down there in the snow, whatever. Okay, okay, where are the bombs? You know, the plane was gone for 20 days. Okay, that's the first thing. The bombs have never been found. Okay? 2,000 pounds of high explosives. Okay? Let's think about what a terrorist organization some organization could do with that. Okay? Now, the second thing that was odd about this whole thing is that, you know, usually, let's suppose he committed suicide, okay? Most people that commit suicide in such a fashion leave a suicide note. Okay? They want people to know why they committed this crazy act of self-immolation, right? There's no suicide note. Where's the suicide note? He was with his parents, I believe, the weekend before this, in good spirits. From all reports, I don't think he was in control of that craft. I think, from all reports that I've read, that when he hit that ground, when he hit the button for in those craft, usually you're gonna have an air-to-air radar and you're gonna have a ground radar. Okay, and you switch between the two. They're not constantly on at the same time. Well, if he's going for his bombing run, he's gonna switch his ground radar on. And from the report that I've read, that he was with his wingman. Flying towards the bombing range, they did a radio check, and the last thing anyone heard was that he was getting ready to start his bombing run. Well, when he gets ready to start his bombing run, he hits that button. I want to know what happened when he hit that button, because I don't think he was in control of that aircraft at all. I think that he was dead before he got on that aircraft, and they just took his body in the plane pods and just dropped him on the side of a mountain from a helicopter. Okay. Or he pushed that button, and we don't know what happened after that.
Do you have any clue about what he could have found out there in Arizona?
He knew that the flare drop was bunk.
Okay.
And he wanted to tell someone about it. And the government knew that he wanted to tell someone about it.
We're going to come right back with William, and we're going to talk about some other conspiracy angles. One of them involves President Clinton.
Yeah, well, just before we go, his trainer, Emilio Svoboda, who was his trainer from the same base in Davis-Monthan, died 6 weeks later in another plane crash flying an A-10. His trainer.
Yeah, so you're saying that he probably would talk to his trainer.
Of course he would. The chain of command of any military organization is to go to your CO.
And then another thing that's kind of mysterious is what happened with HAARP. We all know about that. There's a connection to the Phoenix Lights. Don't go away, folks. I'm Jerry Pippin. I want to take a moment to talk to you about astrology. We all enjoy reading astrology in the newspaper, love, life in general. But I want to talk to you about C.C. Stevens. She's in Arizona, and she is really a top-notch astrologer. And she does something a little different, and I think you should know about it. She offers to her customers the Book of You for only $35. Literally, this is a book about you. I don't really have time in a radio commercial to go into all of the details of why you should consider ordering the Book of You. So I urge you to click on this banner that's on this page with the show and check it out. And you can order it for $35. Check, credit card, whatever. This is a great gift idea, too, so order now.